I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 7th of January. An article in The Nation magazine caught our attention, which originally appeared at TomDispatch.com, written by Ann Jones, and titled America's Child Soldiers, the Pentagon's Junior ROTC Program Canvasses Public High Schools for Future Soldiers. It appeared in the December 16 issue of The Nation. And Ann is our guest this hour. Ann is a journalist and author. She's a photographer. She's written 8 books. Most recently, War Is Not Over When It's Over, an account of the impact of war on women. She's also the author of Kabul in Winter, based on her experiences working as a humanitarian volunteer in Afghanistan. She goes to that country periodically to report on developments there. She's a Wisconsin native, born and raised in Eau Claire, received her doctorate in American Literature and Intellectual History from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, taught at City College of New York, served as coordinator of women's studies at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, and was a member of the writing faculty at Mount Holyoke College. And this woman gets around because she's now living in Norway and joining us by Skype, I believe, from Norway. We'll be welcoming phone calls as we look at the article, which starts with the Child Soldiers Prevention Act, passed in the fall of 2008, designed to protect children all over the world from being forced to fight. But as she writes, why should Washington help the children of Sudan or Yemen escape war when it spares no expense right here at home to press our own impressionable, idealistic, ambitious American kids into military service? The article is primarily a critique of the Junior ROTC program, which is in many schools in this country. Hello, Ann. Thank you so much for being with us.
Hello, Kathleen.
Hi. So you're living in Norway now?
Yes, yes. Trying to get the feel of what it's like to be in a country that is focused on equality, democracy, and world peace. It's a very pleasant place to be.
Do you notice a difference, really?
I notice an extraordinary difference, actually. It's quite funny because Americans and Norwegians use the same vocabulary, talking about freedom and liberty, democracy and equality. But those ideals are actually put into place in Norway in ways that we see them slipping out of place in the U.S. So it's quite interesting to see two countries on opposite trajectories, both holding what seem to be the same set of values, but one acting them out, the other seemingly throwing them out.
Hmm. I'd like to start with your analysis, and an extensive one it is, on the Junior ROTC program, and later we'll talk about the Child Soldiers Prevention Act. I had no idea how large the Junior ROTC program in this country was. There are tens of thousands of young people participating.
Half a million, more than half a million at the latest count. There are active programs in 3,400 high schools around the country, and more being opened all the time under Pentagon pressure. Their goal is to increase that number substantially.
And tell me a little bit about the history of the program, which I found fascinating. It was started in 1916?
Yes, during the First World War. And the notion was to train young people in what it meant to be a part of the military. But when those services, when the Pentagon offered those services to the American public, only 6 high schools signed up for it. So it didn't really catch on at all until sometime in the 60s when the Pentagon started making a somewhat bigger effort, but then after the abandonment of conscription in 1973, when the military started having trouble raising an all-volunteer army, the pace of the program picked up a great deal, And then in the 90s, when Colin Powell was Secretary of Defense, he really pushed this program and got it off the ground. And it's been growing like mad ever since. And, of course, since 2001 and these wars that we've been fighting, the need for soldiers grew and increasingly the pressure to have more JROTC programs.
Mm-hmm. And certainly Colin Powell spent a lot of time in his public life talking about how the military had benefited him. He really directed, is it safe to say, this program to expand to more school districts with disadvantaged young people?
Yes, it was particularly under his guidance that that program became explicit. They figured they could have much better luck targeting what they called educationally and economically deprived schools than they could in more privileged schools. Because indeed, they'd been always, from the start, they'd been getting a lot of pushback from schools in better economic neighborhoods and with better educational programs where the parents were very involved with the schools and parents really had other ideas for their children's future. So that pushback from concerned parents had been keeping them out of a lot of school districts. Mm-hmm. And they figured quite rightly that they would not get the same pushback from deprived schools where, and this is increasingly true, joining the military seems to be, for many of those youngsters, about the only game in town, about the only job potential they have. But, you know, there's a kind of funny admission behind Colin Powell's interest in this, and that is, as he sets it forth in his autobiography, he was not a good student. He didn't like academic subjects, and he wasn't successful in them. And so when he got to college and got into the ROTC programs, which existed in colleges and universities at that time, he was very happy. He had really found his niche in life. And that gave him the idea that there ought to be such programs for high school kids because he would have had a better time in high school if he hadn't had to take all those academic subjects and could have gotten into the military earlier.
You write that, and I'm interested in your talks that you had with the young people and what you observed. You say you first stumbled upon junior ROTC kids a few years ago at a Veterans Day parade in Boston. And this is what I found striking, this whole using weapons and having weapons close to school and in school, many people will find just a little frightening. 14 and 15-year-olds you saw in military uniforms carrying rifles against their shoulders?
Well, since then, the military has changed under the pressure from a lot of school systems after so many school shootings. They've changed to gas-powered pellet guns instead of actual rifles, but they still look like rifles and behave like rifles. And I'm told on good authority that the majority of schools that have JROTC programs do have shooting ranges right in the schools. And some of the major cities have fought the battle against this. San Diego was successful a few years ago in getting the rifle ranges shut down. And Chicago has fought the good fight. I don't think that they've succeeded. But the contradiction between school shootings all over the country that are so distressful, so tragic, and then having these programs within the high school that glamorize shooting, just it's quite a glaring contrast. And clearly, most parents feel that the shooting has no place within those schools.
You were struck not only by the participants in this march, but another one up Fifth Avenue on Veterans Day, where you asked young people, and these are pretty young students, 14-year-olds are pretty young, 15-year-olds. You asked them why they had joined Junior ROTC, and the stories that you heard are really, they're very sad.
They are sad. And I'm talking to the students who come from those deprived schools. Many of them come from families that are living in poverty, families that are broken, families that are dysfunctional. They come from families where parents are too busy, really, trying to keep afloat in current circumstances, that for one reason or another they can't fight back against ROTC. And in fact, many of the parents themselves are persuaded to think that this is a very good opportunity for their children. But the result of this is that the kids who join ROTC are disproportionately black and brown and not white. I think they represent by far the great majority of students in the JROTC program, while they really make up, if you count all the minorities who do not consider themselves white, they make up about 25% of the population. So they're extremely disproportionately represented in JROTC. And also, of course, many of these deprived schools are in the South. About 65% of the programs are in the deep southern states.
Mm-hmm. Does it capture, you write about, and I assume this was in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, that you were in the marching band and you got up at the crack of dawn to carry, well, you described the only weapon you carried was your clarinet, but that there is a longing, particularly for young people who are about that age, to be a part of something that's bigger than they are, that gives them a sense of discipline. You got up early to join the marching band and to be a part of something that was grand.
Yes, I do think that this is a constant with kids that age. Kids are eligible to join these programs at 14 and 15. Those ages, by the way, are below the definition of what is specified for the international treaties and our own laws that talk about not using or not using child soldiers and not approving of the recruitment of child soldiers or the use of child soldiers in other countries. That age cutoff point is normally 16. But here, kids can join these programs at the very impressionable age of 14, when I think so many kids are so ambitious, so idealistic, and especially as troubled as the world is these days, and as troubled as many of the communities that they come from, they're really looking for something that they can identify with that is going to be big and important.
Mm-hmm. How are they conducted? You also in the article spend quite a bit of time talking about how expensive these programs are, how school districts have to foot some of the bill with no public input. The Pentagon or the various military branches design the programs that are taught by retired military. Is that correct?
That's correct. Mm-hmm. All of these programs are taught by retired, usually officers of the military, who, it's safe to say, have no qualifications as educators, or most of them have no training as educators, plenty of career training in the military. And the military selects them. The school districts don't have a voice in that, nor do the school districts have a voice in the teaching materials that come from the Pentagon. The financing of these programs is quite complicated, and I think it's deliberately so that people don't understand it. I don't understand it very well myself, but I know that many principals in these schools feel that the military is really subsidizing the school by providing instructors and providing weapons and equipment and uniforms and providing all the teaching materials. So the school principals are under the impression that this is really helping their budgets. But in fact, the school has to pay usually better than half of the salary of the teacher, the retired officers who are teaching, and that's calculated by a very complicated manipulation, but it amounts to a substantial amount. So that in research that was done about these programs by the American Friends Service Committee, they saw and have the documentation to prove it, that these programs actually wind up costing the school districts much more money than they think they're getting from the military. So that the last figures I've seen, for example, for 2004, school districts paid, and at that time the program was smaller, paid out $222 million to the Pentagon. So in fact, the poorest schools in the nation, the poorest school systems in the nation, are actually sacrificing other programs in order to subsidize the Pentagon's program, over which they have no control, and which they think is subsidizing them.
Our guest is Ann Jones this hour, joining us from by Skype from Oslo, Norway, where she is now living. Originally, she's from Wisconsin. We are talking about an article that she wrote that's in The Nation, December 16. It's a provocative one, and we'll post it on our Facebook page if you would like to read it in its entirety. It concerns not only the Child Soldiers Prevention Act, which we will get to during the course of this hour, but the main focus is on the Junior ROTC program. And she describes this as, in the U.S., having the biggest, most efficiently organized, most effective system for recruiting child soldiers in the world, the Youth Development Program, the Junior ROTC program, and contrast that with our stated endorsement of the Child Soldiers Prevention Act, passed in the fall of 2008 by Congress, designed to protect children all over the world from being forced to fight, as she writes, the wars of big men. Here's our phone number. She said that a lot of parents feel that this is a good opportunity. Certainly when she talked to some of the participants in the program, they thought it was a good opportunity, giving structure to their lives. Is this what is available to poor districts, to people from tough economic backgrounds, that they're perhaps not likely for all kinds of reasons to go on to college, so the military might be a good alternative? What do you think? There are some who think that this program is just grand. That's obviously not Anne's point of view. She is the author of a number of books. Her latest book is They Were Soldiers, How the Wounded Returned from America's War, The Untold Story. She's also the author of Kabul in Winter. She spent a lot of time reporting from Afghanistan. And the war is not over when it's over. Here's our phone number. Some of you may be pretty familiar with the Junior ROTC programs or ROTC programs in the country. What do you make of them? Is it a way to recruit soldiers, and we're recruiting child soldiers? Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Lines are open for you right now. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. We'll be with you momentarily. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow during this hour, Bo Leitgaard will join us. He is from Denmark. He's the editor-in-chief of the leading Danish newspaper there and has written several books on modern history. This particular book is a piece of investigative journalism. Not too much has been known about how Denmark's Jews escaped the Nazis. He's written about this in Countrymen, the untold story of how Denmark's Jews escaped the Nazis, of the courage of their fellow Danes, and the extraordinary role of the SS. Ann Jones is here now. We're talking about Junior ROTC, about recruiting child soldiers, and eventually about the Child Soldiers Prevention Act. Our lines are filled. If you'd like to send a message on email, you can do that, and that's talk@WPR.org. Facebook page will have her article. Let's go to Steve in Fitchburg for our first caller for you, Ann. Hi, Steve.
Hi. I'm wondering if you can differentiate between ROTC programs and OCS, that's Officer Candidate School. My oldest brother advised his son that if he didn't go through OCS, he was a fool, because it's just as a better way to go if you're going to make military a career.
Ann?
Yes, my understanding is that OCS comes much farther along the line. The program in the high schools is junior ROTC, and then in many colleges and universities, there is ROTC, Reserve Officers Training Corps, and college students take those, and then some go on to Officers Candidate School. But that doesn't have anything to do with these kids. Most of the kids are going to be entering the military as the grunt soldiers. About 65% of the officers in the military come out of those senior ROTC programs in the colleges and universities, but it's the grassroots soldiers who are coming out of these high school programs.
And do we have statistics, Anne, that show how many of the junior ROTC participants go on to become members of the military?
The statistics vary. This is the problem when you try to get figures from the Pentagon. They're all over the place. But the lowest estimate I have seen is 40%. The higher estimate, at least 60%. I'm sure that varies from time to time.
Mm-hmm. And what happens in the instruction? I know you sat in on some of these classes, didn't you?
Yes, I sat in on quite a number of classes, and again, that varies with the instructors, but I never saw much instruction going on. There was a lot of watching of films, instructive films from the military, mostly on how to parade, watching war movies. There was a good deal of, I can't think of the polite term for a word I say on the radio, but just the exchange of tall war stories, retired officers holding forth on the wonderful experiences they'd had in the military, and impressing the kids no end. So, and then there was a lot of marching around with those guns. I must say the kids learn how to march very well. And the focus in the instruction, I believe, from reading the textbooks, is on the qualities of developing because the military does call this not a recruitment program, but a youth development program. And so the focus in the textbooks is on developing qualities of leadership and good citizenship and teamwork, all the things that are valuable to the military, of course. But the first rule always is obedience to the authorities who have charge over you. And I might say that is a point that many of the educators who have been working against junior ROTC for many, many years raise all the time, because, of course, the point from an educator standpoint of a school education is to learn critical thinking, and that's not attended to at all in JROTC programs, where the last thing the military wants is critical thinking. It wants obedience, and that's what it teaches.
We go to Mark in the UP. Hi, Mark.
Hi. I graduated in 1981, and I went through the ROTC program. I thought it was quite good. I never did join the military, but I'd have to argue that it, you know, it taught us all teamwork, and, well, as your guest points out, obedience and respect for, you know, your elders. And, I mean, it's the same thing as a football coach. He demands obedience. I thought it was a good program. I think it did wonderful things for myself. I never did join the military, but
right.
I know several people who did, and it helped them out immensely.
Are you talking about the high school?
And I'll let you comment on that.
The junior.
Did you go to the junior program, Mark, or the college program?
It was a high school program.
It was the high school, so you were in the junior ROTC program.
Yes, I thought it was quite good.
Okay.
We had a sergeant and a colonel, and the sergeant was a God-fearing man, deeply religious, and he taught us values and that. Yeah, I can't see a bad thing about it. I don't understand why you don't like it, but as this is America, you're entitled to your opinion. So
all right,
go on next.
All right, Mark, thanks for the call. Ann.
Well, I think many people do find, many who go through it, do value in it. And I talk about those in my article of students who felt that it brought structure to their lives and that they learned some good citizenship and some teamwork, as your caller suggested. And in fact, the military says that those are the chief benefits of its program. That's why it calls it a youth development program, because it feels it develops good citizenship in these young people, and that if they didn't get this, they would drop out of school and do drugs and turn to crime and all sorts of terrifying things. But those educators who oppose having the military influence in the school say is that there's no evidence that the students wouldn't get this in the other programs. As your caller says, you might learn the same values on the football team or by participating in student government or any number of other activities that are offered in high schools. The problem with the targeting of the deprived high schools is that students don't really have much of a choice in what to do, because those are the very schools that lack the alternative programs that would give students other opportunities. All of those arts programs and extracurricular activities are exactly what's been pared away from the deprived schools. And for students now, it leaves the military as the only option.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that part of those who are not very concerned about this is that when you look at employment possibilities for young people from disadvantaged schools, where college is not something that a lot of people are able to do at all for a whole variety of reasons, and maybe we need to figure out how to create that path for young people. But the reality is that not many of those disadvantaged students do go on to college, so at least we're affording them a possibility of employment when they leave high school.
Well, they do get employment, but an awful lot of them don't survive that employment in very good shape. One reason I have become an advocate for these kids and against this program is you'll find in the book I've just published about our wounded soldiers. They were soldiers. I spent time on forward bases in Afghanistan and followed the wounded soldiers back from where they were wounded in the field to the hospital at the Bagram base and on with medevac flights to the regional medical center in Germany at Landstuhl, where they're treated on the way home, and then more medevac flights back to Dover Base in Delaware and on to Walter Reed Hospital in Bethesda. And then I followed some of them home, and I talked to the families and the community leaders in the community where these soldiers return. And I was pretty devastated myself by what I saw, by the extent of the suffering of the soldiers we have sent to absolutely needless wars in the last decade. And it's that, and the knowledge then that the military is trying to recoup the replacements for those terribly injured and dead soldiers so that more wars can continue. It's that got my dander up and got me looking at what goes on in the schools. So the kind of employment these kids are going to get after high school, it turns out to be a disaster if that employment takes them on repeated deployments into one war after another.
Let's go to Todd in Appleton. Hi, Todd.
Hi.
Hi.
I was listening to the speaker today, and I agree with a lot of what she says. I'm retired military myself. I retired in 1991 before all of these wars began, and I was in the Army. But I'm concerned about the comparison between young soldiers in foreign countries that are being forced into being soldiers at a very young age. And I'm specifically, let's talk about Africa. And so, and a lot of these rebellions where these young boys are given an AK-47, within 48 hours they're killing other human beings. And I think that's a really far cry from ROTC program in this country. I think that's kind of like apples and oranges there, and that comparison I find a little bit alarming. And other than that, I agree with a lot of what the speaker said. Thank you.
Thanks, Todd, for the call. Ann?
Yeah, if I may say, Todd, I could see why you would find that comparison a bit shocking. But I do not make that direct comparison. What I point out is that our way of recruiting child soldiers is a great deal more sophisticated, that there are indeed these good citizenship lessons in our JROTC, and that the students may go through it and may, in fact, decide not to go into the military, but that it does prove to be persuasive for a great number of very impressionable kids. That's what I object to. That is also a form of recruitment. It's just much more sophisticated and looks much more civilized, but it still results in a militarization of young people at a very impressionable age, and that's what I find objectionable. And incidentally, some of the people who have been most active over the years in opposing JROTC programs being admitted to schools in their localities are veterans organizations. And their reasoning, I take a number of my points from talking to them and from reading their materials and seeing how fiercely they have fought to keep the schools, the public schools, from being militarized, because they, and they're partly the ones who have convinced me to see it in the same way.
Hmm. Tamara on Facebook says this for you, Anne. She's been concerned for some time by the overrepresentation of economically disadvantaged in our military. The one thing that was more equalizing about the draft, but recruiting children who have few other options, she believes, is appalling.
Yes, I think it is too. And in a country that really believed in the values of equality and democracy, we wouldn't be satisfied to see so many of our kids put in that position of having no other choice. In, you know, what we should be doing if we wanted to live up to our American ideals is targeting those deprived, economically and educationally deprived schools, not for the military, but for educational help. In this rich country, we can't finance those economically disadvantaged schools and give those kids a better chance to go on to something else. As we know, the difference between the rich and poor in America these days has become astronomical. It's a disgrace. It's a national shame. And part of that national shame lies right there in those disadvantaged schools and the fact that the country just seems to give up on them and say, oh, this sounds like a good idea. Let's give them a job in the military. At least they'll have a job after high school. Hmm.
Mary in Madison, hi.
Hi. I'm struck by the similarity between what we're doing right now and the old historical fall of Rome. First, it was a noble thing to be citizen, soldier. And then as they built their empire, the wealthy didn't send their kids. And then pretty soon the poor ones could go, and then they granted citizenship to the slaves, if they would go, because everyone they conquered became their slaves. After a while, they were 100% non-native Romans, and in 700, Roman fell from decay from within. Think about how many of the heavily recruited African-American kids are descendants of slaves. We really ought to think about that. That's my message.
Thank you, Mary.
Thanks for that comparison, Mary. And there's also among these JROTC kids and in the military a large number of young people who are the children of refugees or who are counted as immigrants themselves and are promised a fast track to citizenship if they will serve in the military. So, yes, the comparison to Rome is appropriate in many ways.
More phone calls in a moment. We're speaking with Ann Jones this hour. Her article, America's Child Soldiers, the Pentagon's Junior ROTC program canvasses public high schools for future soldiers, appeared December 16 in The Nation. It's on our Facebook page. She is with us now. She now lives in Norway, and she's joining us from Oslo, Norway. We're looking at this program and welcoming your thoughts on it, and we will do another show. We'll, down the road, give us a little bit of time, be speaking with people from the Junior ROTC program to explain what it is they are doing, and that will be, we'll let you know when it will be. So Anne is with us to talk about the article and to welcome your phone calls. Our number, one line is open, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to Tom next in Westby. Hi, Tom. You're on the air.
Hello, Kathleen and Ann.
Hi.
I have been listening to the program since the beginning, and I would like to present a little bit of a different view. I was an ROTC instructor.
Hmm.
ROTC, not ROTC, please.
Mm-hmm.
That reflects back on some thoughts back during the Vietnam era, perhaps. But the Reserve Officer Training Program does serve a big benefit to our nation. Now, I'd like to talk about the junior program. I am a graduate of University of Wisconsin and of the ROTC program there. I retired in 1985 and taught junior ROTC in Des Moines, Iowa, for 11 years. We started a program there with the support of the school district superintendent. And I faced some of the same problems that I'm hearing on your program. There was a group there called Beyond War that probably is a national program, and they were very, very much opposed to starting such a program. I met one of the members of Beyond War, and I said, I'd like to have you come and visit one of my classes. She did. And she changed her mind. In Des Moines, our curriculum was very much up to the instructors. Now, remember, I have been retired since 1996 from teaching. I did require certification. It was required that I go to a series of courses to qualify as a technical instructor. So I have had training, and I hold a certificate from Iowa. I don't know that all states require that or all districts do, but I did. I taught in a suburban school in Des Moines. We had a large number of inner-city students in that particular school. There are five high schools. Four of them at one point had the junior ROTC program. And it is true that I did have a fair number of African-American and other minority students. In the school that I taught at one time in the 90s, we had students from 26 different nationalities that were coming from behind the former Iron Curtain, a lot of Vietnamese and Hmong and Laotian students. And some of those were very active in the program. We tried to be very inclusive. We had to prove ourselves to not only the principal, but to the rest of the faculty. And I had a sergeant that taught with me. I'm a retired officer, just like you said. And we were able to convince nearly every one of those, including some people that I knew because they admitted to me that during the Vietnam War they had been anti-war protesters. They saw our program as one of keeping kids in school, providing opportunities to belong to some group where they might not fit otherwise, whether that was sports or band or theater. And we had all of those programs, and they were excellent. In terms of going on to service, I don't know where you got your figures. You said the Pentagon, and it may be true now, but I can guarantee you that nowhere near 40 to 60% of junior ROTC graduates nationwide at the time I was teaching went on to service. Most of them would not have been able to qualify for service because of their drug or alcohol or criminal records. They would not be able to qualify. I am familiar with that because I worked during summertime with students that were attending junior ROTC in Chicago schools or other inner city schools. I did have students that went on. I had several graduates that got ROTC scholarships to colleges of their choice. I had one student that got an appointment to West Point. But I want to talk about a couple of the students that I had that were not able to go on. I had several blind students, and they participated fully in the program. In fact, the last year that I taught, we had an awards ceremony every year to present awards. Military gives out a lot of awards, and we did too. Our cadet of the year was a blind student who had been blinded at age 5 because his mother did not give him necessary drugs. She was on drugs herself. That young man was very talented with music. He was an extremely good teacher. He taught a lot to our students, the other students, about being blind and what it took him to succeed. And I've got to tell you that one of the things that I taught him was how to rappel off a 40-foot tower.
All right, let's get a response. We're going to do a show on junior... I've just always known it as ROTC. We've called it that since I was in high school before Vietnam. But ROTC, please get in touch with us, Tom, and we'll be interested in having you on the air more about this. But Ann, his response, is his program an anomaly, what he did? Do you see value in it?
Well, the military, as he suggested himself, is quite changed now, and I think the pressures are considerably different. I would recommend to everyone historian Andrew Bacevich's latest book, Breach of Trust, which discusses at some length how the military has changed in recent years. But that said, our caller is a wonderful representative of the program and very persuasive. And in fact, since I've written this article, I've been surprised at the great number of generals and naval commanders who don't seem to have anything better to do than to write me letters to change my point of view. And the official story, which is the story of many students who go through the program, is one of youth development. And there are many heartwarming stories of good things that happen to young people in the course of the program. But my argument is, and the argument of most educators who oppose the program, is that the military does not have any business in the high schools with youth of that age. And you know, the Marine Corps actually has a program called the Young Marines. They take kids from age 8. That's not in the public schools, but this interest of the military in youth is, I think, contrary to what our nation should be standing for. I have problems with ROTC, or ROTC, as I still prefer to call it, in the universities as well. But the Pentagon has made it now so lucrative to universities to welcome them back in the form of big research programs that they are moving into the universities again, the elite universities again as well. But I'm not going to quarrel about those programs for students that are over 18. But my quarrel is with militarizing our high schools and glamorizing the position of soldiers, enticing so many more of these young people into the military these days at a time when I believe our military is being very badly used, very misused and abused by civilian leadership in this country, as it has been for more than a decade now.
I don't want to ignore, we're running short on time, Anne. I want to make sure that we get, because you start the article with the Child Soldiers Prevention Act, which is certainly worth another whole show, but you talk about this act that was passed in 2008 by Congress, designed to protect children from being forced to fight, as you call it, the wars of big men.
That law concerns children in other countries.
Right.
That law was stipulates that the United States should withhold military aid to countries around the world that use child soldiers. And that law was lauded when it was passed. But every year since it has been passed, the executive, and this is our civilian leadership again, has given a waiver to most of the countries on the list that use child soldiers, but that our nation considers so important to our national interest that we overlook the fact that they use child soldiers in all the most brutal ways you can think of. So we disregard safeguarding children from being hauled into compulsory soldiership in other countries, and we don't care anything about what happens to them. I'm speaking of countries like Yemen, Sierra Leone, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, and so on. Mm-hmm. And they get a waiver every year and get, as a result, multi-million dollar military aid from the United States. So, but what that illustrates again is the civilian interest in in violating our own national principles, our own national legislation, in order to continue the prosecution of useless wars or to interfere in other countries with special operations forces, as it does in more than 100 countries now, most of these activities kept secret from the American public.
And
so It would be the problem of also then using that military to influence our young teenagers in our high schools, I think, is at least one problem we can become aware of in our local communities, look into in our local communities, and see if we want to try to change that.
Thank you, Anne, so much for being with us. Anne Jones, our guest this hour. The article is America's Child Soldiers. It is in the December 16 issue of The Nation. And you can also find it on our Facebook page, which is The Kathleen Dunn Show. She has done a lot of reporting from Afghanistan. And her latest book is They Were Soldiers, How the Wounded Returned from America's Wars, The Untold Story. Down the road, we will talk with people from the junior ROTC program. Thanks to Judith Sears-Poissant and KP Whaley.